You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humann's Garden Centre.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspirations and our sponsor, Jeremy Fenn from Harry Humann's. Good morning.
Morning.
You, David, and to you, Jeremy.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's last late one in the month.
Yes,
so.
It's the last Monday of May, can you believe it?
You have to think about it for a second because what month are we in? It goes so fast.
Scary, man. June around the corner. So, doesn't feel like winter though, hey?
Not yet. Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah, it is
hopefully.
Coming.
We need some rain. Yeah, we all need the rain.
Although I put a thing up on my phone on last week, Jeremy, and the dam levels are pretty good still. Hey?
Okay.
Not that it means we need to go and rush water away, but 69%, I thought it was pretty good.
Okay.
We were 1% below last year's average, so we're good. But I don't think we're going to have rains like we had that year that did that for us. So we still need to be very cautious and look after our water.
That is true.
Mr. Fenn, we are talking about?
I thought we would talk about climbers and sort of hedging and screening plants.
Great conversation. Good topic. I'll put the ball in your court straight away. Let's go for it. I find, Jeremy, we obviously your plants much better than I do. I mean, I always phone you for advice. But obviously, in this particular side of the world where we live, the wind is a factor.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to grow something for a hedge or a screening plant, you really do need to consider that, don't you, Jeremy?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I can't remember what the saying is. Something about good fences make good neighbors. What is it? What is the actual saying?
I'll tell you right now. You carry on. Well, how did you say? Google Woogle. See?
Mr. Google Oogle.
Mr. Google Oogle.
Yeah, because I thought,
good fences, they do make good neighbors because, that's a topic. If your fence is on my side, let's trip. Shouldn't be here.
So, usually in a suburban environment, everyone's living quite close to each other. And, you've got either a wall or you've got a fence. So it could be, if it's a vibrocrete wall, it could probably going to be pretty ugly. Unfortunately, that's the reality of it. So you do want to soften that with something. And then also having plants, it also creates that sort of barrier for the sound to get trapped in.
No, 100%.
So having shrubs that grow above the wall also help to just dampen the sound from your neighbors and stuff.
Definitely. I think there's a difference, though, we got to put out there between trying to plant a hedge purely for that screen. So the hedge becomes your wall, if that makes sense, Jeremy. And then obviously having a wall and a hedge in front of the wall for your own visual beauty. It definitely is a lot easier to have a wall behind a hedge because it stops the wind factor generally blowing holes through the hedge. So sometimes when I do a quote or I see a client, I sort of say to them, well, it's now time to cut that hedge down by 3 meters. And I can see their faces starting to panic. And it's like, well, guys, if we let it get any taller, we're getting all the holes. You know, it gets a bit thin. And the one problem with hedging, Jeremy, which I find, and even I even suffer this on my teams because as a maintenance service, we go there, we just trim the outside of the hedge to keep it in its box shape.
Mm.
It's what happens is the inside of the hedge gets quite bad. It gets quite leggy, quite woody. And you'll notice that when it's time to cut back, you cut slightly further back than usual and you end up with a big gaping hole through the hedge. So what people don't realize is a hedge is, in my opinion, it's quite a process. If you want a hedge, it's a case of letting it grow up. Then at some time in its life, you've got to literally cut the top off completely to allow more sun into it.
Mm-hmm.
The sun, and obviously, depending on the time of year, you can come to Harry Gummins and you can be given the right feed for the hedge because nutrition, feed for anything is important to help it grow. And obviously, we talk about water right to the beginning of life. Water is essential for a good hedge as well. So, but we're not going to go into those now. We often speak about water, so let's leave the water aspect. We know we need water, but it's a case of cutting the hedges quite heavily on top, Jeremy, allowing sun through, and then sporadically, I teach my guys to take the hand cutters and actually put your hand into the hedge and actually try and, without creating all these stupid holes, try and create pocket holes of sun that the sun can get in. So what actually happens is the hedge is actually healthy from the inside growing outwards. And when you need to cut the hedge back by an extra 20 centimeters, for example, or 30, it's actually green on the inside and it doesn't make a massive difference, Jeremy. And I think that's just talking about hedging plants, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely something. So when you when you chop that top off, let's say if it's something that maybe gets to 5 or 8 meters in normal conditions and then you want to make it into a hedge, when you chop that top off, it's going to make more branches down below.
100%.
And that's just how it works. So, the hedging, as you said, is combination of either it's making it for like beauty, or yeah. it's actually using the hedge as the windbreak.
100%.
So then you've got to be very careful on what you use. And sometimes it even works to put different, like different plants and different shrubs together, so that the one might grow in one way and go more, a little bit higher up, and then maybe get sparse at the bottom, and then you've got the other one coming
yeah,
through at the
definitely.
Bottom. And you've got a combo that, that does that. But let's go back to climbers. And I thought, in terms of climbers, you get ones that do sort of a twining kind of habit, and then you get the ones that actually stick to walls. So the twining ones will need something to climb onto. And like either a, like if you've got a, one of those fence, what are those fences called? With the diamond
yeah,
fence.
Yeah, the diamond mesh fence, yeah. PVC. And you want it to have a PVC coating on it as well. Because I find the metal can get quite hot in summer. People don't realize that
yeah.
plants can actually burn, especially when we're in our 30-degree weather, Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly. So you're either having that sort of fence, or you're putting trellises up against a wall. And then those climbers are going to do their actual...
Their job.
Their job. Their, yeah. their natural tendency, where they're going to go up and they're going to send out those tendrils. And then sometimes they sort of flop off the wall or off the fence, and then you can just go there manually and sort of wind them in.
100%. 100%.
The other option is one where you have actually those, what are those, eyeball? I can't even think today.
Yeah,
those, like,
eyeballs. Yeah. Let me do the wire works.
And then you do a wire yeah. in a pattern, and then you can actually get that effect of having like a... like a diamond pattern
100%.
Going up and down the wall.
So I was just actually going to, once you'd finished, also mention that. So it's also important to know what you want from that climber, Jeremy, because mm-hmm. I do a lot of diamond mesh fence for clients, but when I do it, I end up using sort of like half a meter gaps, and it's quite a big diamond in essence. So it's not a fence, and it can create the most beautiful pattern. I've got a client where we've just trained the ivy on it, and mm-hmm. but remember, from a distance, you can still see the wall.
Yeah.
So you've got to figure out if you want the climber to cover that whole wall, or if you want it to be shaped in that regard. If you want it to cover the whole wall, then I would recommend to veer away from the wire fencing and actually mm-hmm. use like a trellis
yeah.
that they can come and get at your nursery, because you get the trellises with the 50 mil gaps, mm-hmm. you get the 100 mil gaps, mm-hmm. and so on and so on. Excuse me, I'm sounding a bit fluey. If the 50 mil gaps are smaller, then what happens is the creeper can obviously cover between itself quite easily, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah.
I just find on those big gaps, I've got a client who wants his bougainvillea to like cover his wall, and I said to him, well, it will, but you know, we now have to sort of cross-strain it through everything rather
yes.
than having something to creep on or climb on or, yeah. or tie it to. So it's all, again, you know, everything needs planning, and that's what we've always said this, Jeremy, from the get-go. Planning and the pre-work is always the most important, I think, when it comes to any job, in
yeah.
my opinion.
I just add on that sometimes you can use the trellis as the feature, and so the trellis, by being there itself, is the feature, and then you've got the plant coming through and doing what you want in the future. So that's a good combination. But then I did also mention you do get some creepers that actually stick to the wall. They've got those little suckers.
Yeah, the tendrils. Like your ivy, obviously,
is
very obvious. And the I love it. It's all over the Majestic and Cork Bay. I can't think of the name of it now. The ficus creeper, tiki creeper.
Tiki creeper. Yeah, exactly.
A bit slow growing, though.
Yes.
So you've got to have patience.
Yeah, the tiki, they call it a tiki creeper because it has those little round... Tiki shaped, I suppose the tiki, what is that? That's like
tendrils.
Well, no, the tiki is the what do they call it? Like the money from
okay.
from like the 50s. I don't know. My brain
let's,
is fried
let's,
today.
Let's all sue. No, we won't. We're just teasing you, Sue.
I am listening.
No, I'm teasing you.
I am listening.
Gotta laugh a little
Can
bit.
Can you see my face? I'm so involved in this conversation. No. I've been extremely quiet.
the shape of the leaf is a small round disc, and that is the shape
like
of a piece
coin.
Of, like a money.
Amazing.
Like a coin.
And that's where Kevin got his name from, man.
Yeah.
I actually never knew that. That's
so it's a ficus pumila, and there's actually two types. So the juvenile is the one that you want, because that's the one that has the small round
yeah.
little things that go very close to the wall and look really, really special. But sometimes you'll have it reverting back to its like adult
yes.
state, and then it gets a big leaf
yes.
and much thicker branches and stuff like
I've
that.
I've seen one with like a tree stem almost
yeah.
for how old it is. So yeah, they are difficult.
Yes, because when it changes like that, that can get a little bit out of hand.
100%. And I also think that people need to, appreciate that nobody can give time for nature. So I learned very many years ago, Jeremy, to stop promising clients how long a plant would take. And it was because of the ticky creeper. So I planted a few along a wall. And I said, no, give it 6 months and this will be covered. And I promise you, 7-8 months later, the thing had just started shooting.
Yeah, yeah.
Very weird, Jeremy. But remember, it's positioning. It's, was it getting the right sun? Was it good soil? I mean, there's always so much that goes with it, you know. So
I think one of the, those ones are those ones that you plant and then you, 100%. Like 3 years later, realize, oh, yeah. Actually, that's what I was looking
it's
at.
It's a ground cover. No, but that also hits another point to mention, Jeremy, in this particular topic, in my opinion, is when you are planting something for a creeper or for the wall, if you don't have a bed or open ground and you have to plant a pot, you've got to understand that you've got to allow the root space to cover a wall space. So, you know, and not being rude to these clients, but to get a client and say, oh, but this 5 meter by 5 meter wall is only covered by a third or a quarter only. And you're like, but so, you know, and it's very difficult when the pot is only 30 centimeters by 30 centimeters. Mm. That pot is already full.
The roots
abound, the nutrients are being all used. So you're not going to get much of it. So you've got to appreciate that. And I always think that if you're trying to cover the entire side of a house, because you get some houses that they want the ivy. I mean, it looks very, what's the word, I suppose, European, very very London-ish, you know, with a creep all over your house. But that's the ones that go in the ground, because remember, then the root has a lot of space to grow. So you've always got to appreciate that, in theory, the root needs space as the top does. So remember, you've got to look at the right plant size, the right pot size. And obviously nutrients, and constant nutrients is the key when you're planting something in a pot, in my opinion. So, but I've definitely seen loads of creepers in pots, you know, especially on pergolas and that. So that all works.
Yeah, it does work well. Yeah, the ivy, I just wanted to mention the ivy, like the normal English ivy actually has now been, I think it's classed as one of the invaders.
Yes.
So we can't actually sell those anymore. I mean, they're still growing all over the place. It's not one of those a category where you have to like rip it out the ground.
Yes, yes.
It's more like you can't.
It's done now. You can't keep getting it anymore. Like mold tablets to the degree that we used to buy from you, which we can't get anymore. And now we've got molds everywhere. So, no, I understand. That's cool.
Yeah, but that actually does stick physically to. So be ready for that if you do have an ivy growing in a garden that's close to a wall. If it 100%. Starts going on that wall, it's going to pull the paint off.
100%.
You know, if you go
the minute one tendril touches the wall, it's a repaint job. You know, yeah. No, 100%. And also window frames,
yes.
Going under your gutters and into your roof is a big problem. You know, a lot of people don't realize the maintenance that these things take. You know, Jeremy.
Yes.
So it's very important.
Just
remember,
to be aware
of it.
It's up
the side of your house. It's no longer just a come in and a quick easy job. It's a 500-foot ladder. It's to put a guy up there. And actually, say, no, it takes time. You know, and people don't realize that. So
yes.
Definitely a good point, Jeremy. If I may ask you your personal opinion on something, a bougainvillea.
Yes.
Because they're not really. We all in Cape Town see them as creepers and climbers, but. You don't actually, I mean, there are hundreds of varieties of bougainvilleas, and you get the shrub ones as well that you can let grow. But do you recommend putting them on your house, a bougainvillea?
On your house?
Well, on a trellis, obviously, because they don't have tendrils and they can't stick.
Well, just remember that most bougainvilleas will have the thorns,
yeah,
or at least have 100%. Something that could be. So I think you've just got to be careful. I think they're very good, they work very well. Sometimes people think like, oh, it's very quick growing. But again, it's one of those ones that needs to settle and it needs to be
a time. Definitely.
Yeah. And then once it's established, then it's like crazy. 100%. But I don't know about somewhere where people walk and stuff like that, because, you know, you just forget about it and all of a sudden it's sent out this massive thing and then it's got these thorns on it.
Catches
and,
you. Animals. Exactly. Kids. Got to be cautious.
But yeah, in terms of the flowering and the power of... you know, when you have a flowering bougainvillea, it's quite a spectacular sight. So,
but you know what frustrates me in my job, Jeremy, is like you plant this bougainvillea, you do all the care, it's loved, and it just don't. And then you go down the road and some bougainvillea is seeded outside the house in the paving and is spectacular and flowering. And nature is an incredible thing, isn't it, Jeremy?
So we're going to just tune in. Good morning. Goeiemôre and welcome. We are busy with the Garden Zone from David Parker from Budding Inspirations and our sponsor, Jeremy Fenn from Harry Humans. And it's all about planting
climbers,
et cetera,
perfect. Perfect. So, Jeremy, one thing I was going to say to you before we took our seed break is that when it comes to climbers and creepers, I saw this in a TV show once in London, and I just fell in love with it. So I've got a few clients who actually have trees that have died or busy dying.
Yeah.
And they're still quite strong. And I said, well, instead of ripping them out, what you do is you plant a creeper on them.
Yes.
And the creeper literally travels up the tree and down all the branches. And it actually becomes quite a beautiful, eerie-looking sort of like green shape. I can't explain it to you.
Feature,
now.
Yeah.
I love silhouettes. It's one of my favorite times of day when it's sort of dark and you can see the outlines of the mountains and everything. And I just think it's such a lovely thing because it actually brings this green back. It keeps the tree okay. It obviously the tree's not full of leaves, so that you've got a little bit less shade on your area. So I kind of like it. I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, it makes it like a feature. Well, I suppose it's not a long-term thing because as that tree, the roots will eventually. Yeah. It depends on what kind of tree it was.
100%.
Because sometimes it's going to rot and then fall over.
Jeremy. But, so my question to you is: we've kind of covered it with the wind aspect and that. Wind in Cape Town is just generally in Cape Town is a big factor, isn't it, Jeremy?
Yeah.
Because I drive around and even noticing in my own home, I've got like a solanum hedge. And when we had that wind that day, it lasted for about 4 or 5 days. The right side of that hedge that obviously is exposed, it was completely wilting and bad. So it is quite a big factor, isn't it, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think when hedges are established, then obviously it'll be much better for that plant when it comes back.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it'll revive itself much easier.
Okay.
But, you know, we do have that prevailing, we've talked about it many times, about like a prevailing southeaster.
Never ends.
So, like, a lot of people have those...
like shade cloth structures up to protect from the wind and that?
Eugenia, Zygium, you know, the one with the... with the pink...
Australian cherry tree.
Australian cherry. So they use those as hedges as... yeah, as quite a lot, and you'll find that the wind side, will be like bare, but then the on the other side will be good. So it still works quite nicely 100%. as a hedge.
So I deal with sometimes not just hedges, but trees that have got that issue. So the quarter side of it to the wind is burning and dying. And what I used to just keep cutting it back into the client, but eventually I said to myself, no, hang on, I think I'm actually doing more destructive because if I keep cutting it back to try and take away what the wind's affecting. Then the wind will just affect the next part of the tree. So sometimes you actually have to leave.
Just leave it.
Because that is the windbreak. It becomes the windbreak naturally by itself. And as you say, when we go into winter and hopefully have the calmer days and the water comes through from nature, then those parts of the tree start shooting again.
So it is
important. But I love, because you mentioned earlier about the wall and the hedges that come above the wall.
Yeah.
And beautify. So you'll see a lot of clients will have like this perfect hedge to the top of the wall. And then where the wind shears across the wall, you'll see it battles there. So you'd obviously just keep it there. But any suggestions on indigenous trees that you know? I mean, we've got 5 more minutes just to...
Well, yeah, we didn't really talk about the different climbers. I mean, we spoke to a couple, but I wanted to mention that sometimes the jasmines are really good, especially the star jasmine. If you've got a semi-shade spot, because you also get that fragrance.
Beautiful.
The Chinese jasmine gets burnt like to shreds with the wind. So it works in very sheltered positions because that's even more intense intense smell. Yeah, the Chinese jasmine. And but otherwise, on that structure out in front of the nursery where we had the little coffee van, we put a little structure where people could sit, and we've got a snake vine growing on there.
That's a Senecia, hey?
No, I can't remember. No, I'm going blank on that. I'm struggling
with
names.
With the big yellow
today.
Flowers?
Yes.
Is that not the Senecia timorides?
There is one, but it's not the one I'm thinking about. And then we've got a Roysisus that's... someone asking a question.
We got 2 questions. Good morning, Hazel. How's it? Hazel has... These are 2 questions, okay? Can a ponytail palm be planted in the ground near the house? And should I prune my vast gooseberry a bush, please?
So I'll deal with the ponytail palm, Jeremy. I would imagine a gooseberry you must cut once it's finished seeding and flowering anyway.
Yeah, you cut those. Yeah. Cut
done
those
and back. Dusted. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So your ponytail palm, Hazel, is definitely can plant it outside. I would always give a half a meter gap between the house. I dug out a yucca the other day, or a quarter line. They're pretty much the same type of plant. And it had been left for many, 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 many years, and it had unfortunately started breaking the vibrocrete. But what you can do is a bit of advice is it is a ball root, so it doesn't send out roots. It just keeps growing on itself. So you need to anticipate that growth. And maybe what you can do, if you do plant a bit close to the house, and when you're busy digging the hole, I do this a few times. You can maybe put some bricks in the hole between the house and the root, and it will actually eventually hit that, and you'll notice that first. I have dug down before, Jeremy, and I have actually chopped away some roots before, especially on a bigger root ball. I mean, the Strelitzia is a root ball, palms are root balls. They're all the same. I mean, in your opinion?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you have seen the one that we've got in the nursery.
Yes, in the middle there.
That's popped that pot.
Yes.
Okay, so it depends on how long you're going to be in that house.
Yeah, 100%.
Because if you leave that thing to grow, I would say that thing is going to get like over a meter wide. And that the strength of that is quite immense. So it will
Because it's a ball root, it just fights everything in its way.
Exactly.
You know, it's so not like a running root that will then so we get the soft rooted systems like plants that will hit the wall, Jeremy, and then actually turn 90 degrees and follow it, and rather than breaking it. But yes, you're spot on.
Yeah, so I would be wary of planting it too close to the house. I mean it's definitely fine in a garden, but too close to a house or a wall, you are in the future. I mean, 100%. You know, we're talking about, because I've seen they've actually, I don't know how long those plants live, but, you know, like 50 years, whatever, that root ball is going to be massive, like absolutely, so I would just be wary of planting it too close.
So let's
like Alan Gray, like long-term 50-year advice here, man, hey? It's good advice. Yeah.
So Hazel, I hope that answers your two questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And you want to finish off on your climbers?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I do want to ask you about jasmine. Sorry, I was going to interrupt you. There is an indigenous jasmine, isn't there, as well, Jimmy? Because you mentioned the English jasmine and a Chinese jasmine. Am I mistaken?
Yeah, there is a. Well, they consider it an indigenous.
But it's nowhere near prolific smelling or anything like that.
It does have a smell. It is one of the star. It's also a star shaped flower.
Okay.
But it's more like a rambler, shrubby, rather than a full on climber.
Okay.
So it does climb at a very slow. And it does have that jasmine smell, so 100%. That's where the jasmine. But it's Jasminum multiparticum, I think.
100%.
The name is
And I just want to say one last thing, Sue. Before Jeremy said something quite interesting there. He said rambler and climber. Remember, you got to take note of that. And again, that's why you would go to Harry Gummins and get this amazing advice from everybody there. Because I also like to plant pots on the edge of, say, verandas or balconies, and then what happens is they cascade over the pot and then soften the wall and that. You wouldn't really use a climber for that, though. You would use a rambler, exactly what you just said, or something that likes to hang or grow down. And there's a little bit of a difference, I suppose. In essence, a climber would hang as if it's got nothing to climb onto and it hangs over a pot, it's naturally going to go down. But once it grips on something, it will eventually start climbing into them. So, but just remember the difference in that. And thank you so much.
Yeah. So that's it. Anything else you want to share with us?
Well, I mean, we did talk about the hedging stuff as well, but we can save that for another day.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about this job and what we do. There's so much to talk about all the time, Jim. And I always find that everything we speak about sort of comes into effect with everything else. So it's like a snowball that keeps growing. Thank you, Mr. Fenn.
All right.
And if anybody needs any advice, you can give me a call on 073-247-0351. Thanks so much.
Oh, that is your number.
That's my number. I'm going to give you Jeremy's number. Well,
Jeremy, you don't need to give it a number.
They must come and visit me.
They can find you at Harry Kuman's, right?
Yeah, don't
Jeremy sends out locations, not numbers.
So, thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
See you in 2 weeks' time.
See you in 2 weeks' time.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
This gardening feature was brought to you by Harry Kuman's Garden Center.